yourself a song to sing, and sing it till you're done. Yes, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber barons straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found, whose crimes have gone unpunished now.
Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, today we want to talk about what I think is ominous news coming out of the Federal Reserve, Central Bank of the United States. Well, what is that news? They're just about to really accelerate in a major way the interest rates. They came out last month with a token 0.25%. In other words, what they call 25 basis points, that's the jargon that's used, hike in the interest rate. Well, now, next week, or maybe I think it's this week, they're going to raise it 50 basis points, and then another 50, and then six more times the plan is to raise interest rates. We're looking at somewhere between 2.5-3% increase on top of what is already in the 10-year Treasury bond, almost 3%. So we're looking at 5-6% interest rates accelerated in a very short time. What this means is that the Federal Reserve has decided, as a solution to inflation, to provoke a recession in the United States, on top of the 10% plus consumer inflation already going on, which is going to rise, continue to rise, and we'll talk about why. So the Fed has decided recession, the headline of today's show. In fact, we've already got a contraction of the gross domestic product in this country for the first quarter. Preliminary numbers just came out, and the economy is already contracting. Mainstream economists had forecast a 1.1% quarterly growth, that's an annual rate, for the first quarter of this year. It came in minus 1.4%. The economy is already contracting, which is what I had predicted and forecast late last year was going to happen. Looking at the direction of consumer spending, looking at inflation at the time, looking at the government cutting off any social program spending stimulus, looking at what was happening with the U.S. global trade deficit. All those were signals to me that, well, we're heading into a dramatic slowdown. And I had predicted that the recession would hit the U.S. sometime late this year, 2022. Well, apparently I was wrong. It's already here. Now, let me give you a clarification. What defines recession? Well, you know, the popular definition is when the gross domestic product, the measurement of the U.S. economy's growth or not, contracts for two consecutive quarters. GDP contracts. That's like a rule of thumb, right? That's what's called a technical recession. Actually, a recession is whatever the key economists, you know, belong to the National Bureau of Economic Research, NBER, get together and say is a recession. And they don't look at just GDP. They look at what's happening with employment, what's happening with industrial production, what's happening with trade, and so forth. All of the major indicators, and then they declare after the fact, months after, whether we went into a recession, and months after, whether we came out of a recession. Now, another problem with that definition is a recession is when GDP and the economy and all these indicators continue to contract. As long as these numbers are falling, you're in a recession. But once the numbers stop falling, and maybe level off, the definition used by the United States is that, oh, we're no longer in a recession. Now, you may drop 10, 15% over several quarters, and then you stop dropping, and maybe you gain back 1% of that 15% contraction. Oh, the economy is out of recession, which is really an oxymoron way of defining recession, because you should be out of it when you get back to the level of economic activity that you lost in the first place. Now, that's just one of a number of the anomalies and crazy ways the U.S. defines statistics. We've talked about that before, employment, inflation, and everything. You know, these are the key details that don't get into the New York Times or into your local media saying, oh, we got a recession. Oh, we don't have a recession anymore. So that's a digression. Think about the fact that, you know, 1.4% contraction. Yes, okay. That's a technical recession. The real recession is something broader, and mainstream economists together define that. But that, even in defining that, you got this crazy sense that, oh, if you're no longer contracting, it's over. It's over when you get back what you lost, anyway. Okay, so back to the first quarter, already indicating a technical recession. Second quarter is going to continue because the forces driving that contraction in GDP are deteriorating even further. Now, when we look at GDP, we look at four elements that comprise GDP. One is consumer spending, which is almost 70% of GDP. Retail spending is part of consumer spending. You know, I think it's like 40% of consumer spending. That's retail. When you go out and buy stuff at the store and services, okay? The rest of consumer spending has to do with housing construction and buying houses, new housing and so forth, and other factors there as well. So, you know, retail is part of consumer spending. Consumer spending is 70% of GDP of technical recession. The other percentages are business investment, which runs about 10% or so. And on top of that, you got government spending, which runs, you know, 20-25% or so. And then you got the fourth category is called net exports. In other words, exports minus imports. And typically, the imports are greater than the exports. In other words, U.S. buys more stuff from abroad than it sells abroad. And if that number is negative, if we import more than we export, that subtracts from GDP. Okay? If you increase government spending, it increases. If you increase consumption, it increases GDP. If you increase investment, it increases GDP. But net exports, if it's negative, it subtracts from GDP. Well, what do these things look like going forward, these categories? Well, first of all, since we're finished here with net exports are contracting, or the negative is 18%. 18%. In other words, we buy far less than we sell from abroad. Well, why aren't we selling so much abroad? Because the rest of the world is also stagnating or in a recession already. So these people aren't going to buy American goods if they're in a recession, just like we wouldn't buy imports if we were in recession. It's mixed. All right, so that's negative going forward. Net exports, trade, the deficit, trade deficit, that's negative going forward. That subtracts from GDP this quarter. What about consumer spending? Well, this is a biggie, and this has been doing poorly since late last year. And, of course, it's doing poorly now in real terms. GDP is always expressed in real terms. In other words, you got to adjust for inflation to get the real growth of the economy. Otherwise, it's all price increases. And we know we got a lot of price increases going on here for almost a year now, since late last summer. So we've got inflation, which when you adjust for inflation, reduced consumer spending for inflation, real spending is flat or negative. Inflation is causing consumption to fall. Why? Well, you know, if oil prices, gasoline at the pump doubles and we have problems with certain, you know, food goods doubling, you know, food at home, food away from home, all of that's going up dramatically. Rents are going up dramatically. Services are going up. Utilities are going up. Insurances are going up, right? Well, if you got to pay more in price for those things, then what consumers do is buy less of other real things. They make an adjustment. You may have heard about, oh, Netflix. Netflix has lost a lot of customers. Well, because those kinds of purchases, those kinds of services and certain goods are what's called discretionary. When consumers and households are under stress, they buy less of that in order to pay for food and gasoline. That's the big reason why Netflix lost so many customers here going forward. There's other reasons too, competition, you know, Netflix's content is not all that great anymore, etc. But it's mostly inflation. And inflation is going to be whacking other companies that way as well. You know, earnings starting to come out show, even the big tech companies are in trouble. They're not selling as much. You know, it just came out a few days ago, Amazon, all down. Oh, what is Alphabet, Google, down, Apple down, slowing down, okay? Well, consumers are getting whacked by the oil companies. Consumers are, you know, getting whacked by these other big corporations raising prices, even if they don't have a supply problem, is beginning to have an impact. I don't see that slowing down. No, in fact, inflation, I think, it will continue at this level at least, and maybe even accelerate. Because inflation is really two things going on. It's supply side problems in goods in particular, you know, goods imported from China and places like that. We've got a supply problem. They're not getting here. The pandemic, right? Was one. Well, they say the pandemic is over, at least in terms of its economic impact. Well, we still got other problems, you know. China is shutting down to try to deal with the pandemic. That means less supply coming over to the U.S. That means what goods do come from China to the U.S. are going to be higher priced. It's not simply the lack of shipping to bring this stuff over as it was during the pandemic. You know, you got a slowdown going on. Globally, China's GDP is going to be half of what it anticipated it would be, at least. You know, it said it would be 5 to 6% GDP this year. No, it's going to be 3 to 4. So you got a global slowdown in China, and you got a contraction going on in the U.S. That's half of the world GDP right there, those two countries. There's a global recession emerging, not just a U.S. recession. And what about Europe? That's a pretty big economic part of the global economy. Well, they're already in a recession this quarter. Wow, that's because of the war. You know, that's because of the sanctions, which we'll talk about. Oil, gas, industrial, and agricultural commodities are whacking the European economy. And like the U.S., they're planning to raise rates. I mean, it just boggles my mind with all these indications of slowing down, why the Fed is raising interest rates like this so fast at record pace. Don't they know that that's going to slow the economy 6 months from now even more? Yeah, they know. They've decided that their way to deal with inflation is to shut down demand. demand's already under great pressure, household demand, consumer demand, because of inflation. Well, they're saying, what we're going to do is squeeze demand, or they call demand destruction. They don't say squeeze, they say destroy, in order to bring inflation down. Now, what does that amount to? That amounts to inflation, a supply problem, and a big corporation price gouging problem, even when they don't have supply issues, you know, like meat cutters and bakery goods and so forth. They don't have a supply issue, but they're raising prices anyway, because they can. See, they're monopolies. So the Fed is going to destroy demand in order to bring inflation down. In other words, the supply side problem, corporations and global supply chains, is the main cause behind inflation, but the Fed's not attacking that. They have no tools to deal with that. So they're going to take it out on the household, on consumers, on us. They're going to engineer a recession. Now, this isn't the first time they've done this. Back in 81, 82, when we had inflation, again, driven by oil and supply. 81, 82, you know, they had to do with the Iran situation in oil and, you know, blocking shipment of oil in the Persian Gulf, et cetera, right? Oil inflation went up, double digit, dragged up consumer prices. What did the Fed do? The Fed raised interest rate to 18%, shut down the auto and the housing industries, which were far more important back then. You know, they're only 20% of the economy now combined. But back then, they were more important. Shut down, engineered a deep recession, deep unemployment, in order to take out on the backs of households and consumers what the oil companies and OPEC, in the Middle East, OPEC countries, really caused. Make us pay, rather than making the real sources pay. Now, fast forward to where we are today. We got the same thing going on. We got the Fed deciding to do the same thing it did back then. And we got oil companies taking advantage of everything, jacking up prices. Because oil is, you know, not just gasoline at the pump. It's everywhere. It's in everything. Businesses need oil to run, or gas, right? So they're jacking up the prices, taking advantage not only of the pandemic, that was last year. Now, on top of that, they got another windfall because of the war in Ukraine. And they're taking advantage of that. Hey, any idea how much the oil company's profits have increased? Well, the numbers just came out. Exxon doubled its profits. Yeah, all of them. All the big U.S. oil companies. Double or more of their profits in the short run here. And what are you going to do with all that money? The hundreds of billions, at least, that they're putting in their pocket that they take from us when you go to the gas pump and you go to the grocery store. What are they doing with it? Well, the forecast by independent sources is that the oil companies, Exxon and Chevron and all their buddies, are going to increase their stock buybacks by $100 billion this year. And that was taken out of your pocketbook, and they're giving it to their shareholders. Massive income redistribution going on by the oil companies to their rich stockholders. Yeah. Well, okay, so consumer spending is under big strain. It's a supply side problem, was pandemic, and there's still some pandemic supply chain hangover problems. Now it's the Ukraine war. And U.S. oil companies are using the Ukraine war as an excuse for raising prices, as I said, and for not increasing production. You see, if you keep supply constrained in the U.S. even, right, the prices will go up. That's what they're doing. There is no natural shortage of oil that justifies the doubling, in some cases, of gasoline and other prices. By the way, diesel is in even bigger trouble, diesel fuel, right? When that price goes up, all the truckers, right, are in big trouble. They're already in trouble, can't make any money. They're going to shut down. They're going to stop rolling. And you don't think that's going to raise the price of goods even further? Yes, it will. That's coming. So the big oil companies in the U.S. refuse to increase production. And what is the Biden administration doing? Oh, they're begging them. They're begging them. They're saying, oh, please increase production. Please, to increase the supply to help bring the price down, because we got an election coming and we're worried that the consumer is going to blame us. Well, they should blame them. What is Biden doing? Nothing. Oh, he says, we're going to open the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. You know, what does the U.S. have? Something like 600-700 billion barrels or something in that reserve. Oh, they're opening it, you know, maybe 10%. Well, here's what's happening. You would think if they opened the petroleum reserve, that that would increase the supply and therefore reduce the price of oil and gasoline. But the oil companies are gaming that too. You see, because they say, when they say they're going to open the reserve, what it means is the U.S. government sets up an auction that the oil companies come to buy below market price oil from the government, from the reserve. So they buy this oil, 50 billion barrels, whatever, from the U.S. at below cost, and they keep their own oil in the ground. So you get no net increase in the oil supply, and therefore you still have a shortage in the marketplace, and therefore the prices keep going up. And then there's another reason why the prices go up, and that's because oil's price is set globally. It's a global market. And you got speculators who buy oil, claims to oil, and then hold those claims and wait for the price to rise, because the supply physical supply does not change. So these global speculators drive up the price of oil, and U.S. oil companies use that as an excuse to raise the price of West Texas crude, which is a benchmark in the U.S. So you got all these games going on by the oil companies. In the meantime, they're raking in double profits and giving themselves $100 billion in stock buybacks. And how much in dividend payouts? We don't even know that. No, that'll be a nice chunk of money at the end of the year, too. And what is Biden doing? Well, not much besides opening the oil reserve. What could he do? Well, what's been done at other times before in the capitalist economy called the United States of America. In other words, you put price controls on the price of oil, or you slap a profit surtax when you have such a manipulated windfall by the oil companies of profits. Now you take some of that back by a profit surtax. That's been done before. Price controls have been done on oil, have been done before. Yeah. Use that money, that surtax money, you know, for the government to subsidize alternative energy even further. Yeah, there's things that could be done that have been done even in this capitalist economy that Biden will not do. And therefore, prices keep rising. Well, the U.S. consumer is going to take it out on the Democrats in November. There's going to be a slaughter in the congressional elections. Just wait and see. Because of the Biden administration not doing the things they could do to help the American consumer. Look, Build Back Better, that's dead. That's been that was dead since last year, as I argued and showed. Nothing's ever going to happen in terms of those social programs. You know, Bernie Sanders should go find a hole to hide himself in, and the squad, too, because, you know, they've totally failed. Oh, but they'll keep telling us, oh, vote for Democrats again. Vote for them again this time, you know. It's debate and switch. It's kind of like what's going on with student debt, you know. Wouldn't do anything about student debt, Biden, even though he promised he would. Wouldn't do anything. Oh, now the election's coming up, so they're throwing up these little floating these balloons saying, oh, well, maybe we're thinking of doing something. Well, that's so that their Democratic Party candidates go out there and say, oh, we're going to do it. Vote for us this time. Can't you see what's happening? We're going to do it this time. And they keep saying they're going to do it, and then they get elected and they don't do it, and then they say they're going to do it next time around, and the American voter falls for it time and time again. It's just a bait and switch. Not going to do anything about student debt. Why not? Because the bankers don't want them to. Well, wait a minute. This is government loans to students, right? Ah, but there's the big loan consolidation industry, you see? Yeah, where the banks will consolidate your government Department of Education loans at a lower interest rate. Well, wait a minute. Is the government charging our kids a higher interest rate than the banks? You bet. That's all designed to force people to consolidate with the private banks. That's the game, you see. Push everybody to consolidation loans where the banks now get the money instead of the government. That's why the government charges the kids more than the banks do. It's set up that way. It's criminal. What do we got? $1.9 trillion now? 40 million students, $1.9 trillion they owe? You don't think that's a drag on consumer spending? Well, it sure is. Okay, that's going to continue, no doubt. So let's get back to the supply side and inflation. Pandemic overhang is affecting supply. China slowdown is affecting goods supply. We still got problems in shipping, both global shipping and domestic transit shipping and warehousing. We got the oil companies who won't increase production, right? And we've got the Ukraine war, which is, you know, a second whammy, a double whammy here, pandemic whacking the supply chains, and now we got the war whacking the supply chains. It's not just oil and gas from Russia, and of course Europe is even more dependent on it. But it's not just oil and gas supplies that are being constrained because of the war. I mean, it's because of the sanctions. The U.S. is trying to get countries not to buy Russian oil and gas. Okay, it's other things as well. It's industrial commodities. In other words, metals in particular, nickel, aluminum, palladium, some of the others are also embargoed or, you know, sanctioned here. And the flow, because of the war and because of the sanctions, of these key elements in production is not occurring. And also wheat production is cut off dramatically because of war and sanctions. And also fertilizers, you know, Russia, I think, for natural fertilizers, almost 100% of the world's natural fertilizers, not chemical fertilizers, but natural fertilizers. Well, you know, this is the planting season in the world, and without fertilizers, production is going to be far less. And without exports from Russia, a lot of countries are going to starve. People are going to starve here by late summer, early next year. Because the war is not ending. The war in Ukraine is going to go on for some time. Because the U.S. doesn't want it to end. The U.S. wants to use the Ukraine war in order to debilitate Russia economically, militarily. Well, we can get back to that. I don't want to go off into, previous shows here, we've talked about that to some degree. But a lot of industrial and agricultural commodities supply has been significantly reduced. And that's a supply problem. And these commodities, the metals in particular, are used in a lot of production of a lot of goods. Autos, for example, the catalytic converters and the batteries and so forth rely on nickel and palladium and other metals from Russia. They can't produce these things without these elements. Well, auto prices are going to continue to go up, folks. No doubt. Yeah. More inflation. And the more inflation you get, the less real spending, total real spending you get. Because people are paying for the price increases with money that they otherwise would be using to buy more goods or services elsewhere. So Ukraine war here is an overlay, exacerbating manyfold the supply problems that already existed, which means inflation is going to continue, which means GDP is going to be under consumer spending pressure going forward. Now, is there a demand side problem to this inflation? In other words, is there excess demand going on? No, because there's no real fiscal spending program stimulus anymore. It never really was that great, you see. It wasn't as great as they said it was. The actual money they appropriated never really got fully spent, and now it's been cut off pretty much. So it can't be demand side. Well, okay, people are going back to work. Yeah, they're going back to work. Many of them aren't, by the way. When they say back to work and they give you the numbers and Biden brags about, we created 7 million jobs. He didn't create 7 million jobs. We lost 10 million and 7 million of them came back. That's not creating jobs. That's returning to work. Okay, some of them, got their income raised, got them at the low end. The wages had to go up because people just refuse to work for starvation at $7.25 an hour. So even the fast food companies had to raise their wages to get people to come back to work. Okay, so there's a little more income. There's a little more demand from that. But that already happened last year. Right. That's not happening in 2022. That's history. Well, you can argue companies have passed on the wages. Yeah, that's true. The big corporations who are monopolies have simply paid people more and passed it on in prices. That is happening, particularly in the goods industries. Yeah. So, there's some wage pressure going on, but not that much. The big problems are the supply chains, global goods, global supply problems, right? The Ukraine war driving all of this further. Why the U.S. would engage in that kind of a military adventure in Ukraine boggles my mind. We weren't even out of the pandemic. The economy was just slowly beginning to mend. And then they pull this off. Democrats are the war party, no doubt about it. Why did they do that? Well, because the U.S. has big economic interests. Big corporations have big economic interests in Ukraine. Since 2015, the U.S. has penetrated the Ukraine, U.S. capitalists, right? And, you know, they're well entrenched in a lot of companies, big business, banks and everything, you know, big interests there. And geopolitically, the neocons been running foreign policy since Bush, well, actually late Clinton. You know, their policy since that over 20 years ago has been to move NATO east and, you know, squeeze Russia, move NATO east, debilitate Russia so it's no longer a factor to be concerned about in the geopolitical realm. And they've succeeded. They've succeeded in doing that. I mean, there's all kind of public statements that show that the policy of the U.S. from the very beginning, years ago, especially since 2005, 2015, 16, has been to bring Ukraine into NATO and Georgia. That didn't work. You know, kind of hard to supply Georgia, a little mountainous country, right? You can't get to it to supply it with military arms. You know, so in 2008, the Russians just squashed that one. But of course, you can supply the Ukraine from Europe quite easily, which is what's happening. So the neocons have a lot to gain and have gained a lot. You see, the U.S. policy has been from the beginning to drive Russia out of Western Europe economically, not just gas, but everywhere, out of the markets, out of the joint ventures and so forth. Get them out of Europe. Create a war in which the U.S. can now once again establish its hegemony over NATO, which was shaken during Trump. Drive the Russians out, not just natural gas, and then open the opportunity for American corporations to come into that vacuum, which is what they're doing. The U.S. will supply Europe with natural gas and oil instead of the Russians. That's the big economic objective of the war. The other objectives there, too. One is, you know, let's see how much the Russians got in terms of military effectiveness and equipment. Let's see what their weapons are and so on and so forth. Test it out, you know. Let's get them to reveal it. That's another objective, right? Solidify some of the quasi-neutral states, you know, behind NATO, Sweden, Finland, Moldova. Yeah, that's an objective as well. And, of course, give a big push to the oil companies and the war industries in the U.S. War production going up and profits going up, right? Oil and so forth going up. All of that. The banks. Well, how did the banks gain from all this? Well, the banks are the new pirates, you see. You know, in the 17th century, you know, they would send these privateers, England and others, these privateers, to go raid the Spanish ships, bringing gold from the Americas to Spain. You know, they'd go and attack these ships and steal the gold, right, and bring it back to England, the cause of the Spanish Armada, right? Which the English did not defeat. They just got sunk because they hit a big storm. Anyway, that's ancient history. But we got pirates today. They're the banks, the U.S. banks. How are they pirates? Well, look what's happening with Russia. The U.S. has frozen their assets, including their dollars and other gold and other assets in Western banks. Russia and all countries have to put some of their assets in various banks around the world for transactions purposes. Well, you know, Russia had, maybe $200-300 billion of this in these central banks and other banks around the world. They had another $300 billion at home in Russia. Well, the U.S. Simply stole that, froze it in those banks, in those U.S. banks, and they're never going to give it back. That's a windfall for the banks. You know, the U.S. did the same thing with Iranian assets, froze them, never gave them back. Venezuela assets, stole their oil companies, sold it off, froze their gold in London, right? This is what sanctions are. Part of sanctions are you just freeze their assets and you take them. Well, this is a kind of modern electronic piracy. Yeah, U.S. banks are a bunch of pirates. They're making out big time. Oil companies, energy companies, making out big time. Other companies, you know, that depend on these commodities coming out of Russia, making out big time. Don't think this is all just geopolitical maneuvering by the United States. You know, behind the scenes, always when there's conflicts are the big oil companies of the U.S. They're always there in the background, you know, pulling strings and making big money out of wars. They're the cause, at least in part, of what's going on in Ukraine. You know, and then they ally with the neocons who want this geopolitical thing, let's crush Russia. And, of course, you know, advisors to the U.S. government, like Rand Corporation for years, have been saying, well, you're going to have to neutralize Russia before you have to go after the real problem, which is China. What's going on now is the U.S. sees Russia and especially China growing in power economically, globally, politically, militarily, and they've decided to cut it off before either of these countries get too strong and become too much of a competitor to the American global empire, right? Take them on now. You know, when they're not as strong as they will be 2, 3, 4 years from now. That's what's going on. The U.S. set the bait. Ukraine was the bait, and the Russians took it. The U.S. strategy is a resurrection of the 1980-81 strategy developed by National Security Advisor Zbigniew Brzezinski, U.S. NSA, Brzezinski, whose strategy was, well, the Russians have gone into Afghanistan. Let's bleed them. Let's give the arms to the locals and bog Russia down, make him spend, you know, lives and cash here in a protracted war in Afghanistan. And then it will cause so much economic and political domestic trouble that there'll be regime change. Well, you know what? It worked with the old USSR. One of the major reasons the USSR imploded was economically. It got bled by that war. I'm not saying that's the whole cause, but it got bled by that war, which only ended, you know, in the late 80s, and then a few years later, it implodes. Well, that's called the Brzezinski Doctrine. And the U.S. is resurrecting Brzezinski 2.0 in Ukraine. That's why the U.S. does not want a settlement in Ukraine. They want this thing to go on. And it will go on until Russia, you know, gives up and retreats back, and consolidates maybe in Ukraine and the Donbass. Russia's not doing so well militarily. It doesn't really have the forces to conquer Ukraine. I mean, look, there's this big talk about 150,000 troops. Well, half of those are only combat troops, typically. So you had 75,000 combat troops, which is about 3 or 4 divisions, and they invaded on 4 different fronts. I think they were betting that, you know, there'd be so much opposition to the Zelensky regime here because of the corruption and everything that the people would simply, you know, say, okay, welcome, Russia. But, you know, the government was too strongly organized and propped up by the United States for 8 years, militarily, economically, and so forth, and the government did not. Ukraine government, right? That's why Russia pulled out of Kiev, I believe. You know, they would have expended a lot more of their insufficient forces trying to take a major city like Kiev. They couldn't do it. So they moved and changed their strategy to, okay, let's consolidate on the eastern and southern fronts. But I don't think they have necessary forces to really do that. You know, the first war, the first principle of warfare, you know, Clausewitz and others, you know, is a concentration of forces. And they didn't do that. They didn't concentrate their forces. They dispersed their forces. And now they're trying to concentrate in a geographic area. We'll see what happens there. There have been some gains. But it's going to be a long war. Unless Russia, you know, mobilizes, you know, its economy and conscription and draft and all that in general and throws in more sources there. In the meantime, you know, the U.S. is helping the Ukrainians to a great extent. I'm convinced there are U.S. special forces on the ground helping them Ukrainians tactically, using U.S. electronic and drones to identify other forces of the Russians and where to attack, where to ambush, and so forth. You know, they're using U.S. satellites, using U.S. drones, etc. So it's going to be a long war. The longer it goes, the more negative impact on the U.S. and global economy, that's for sure. I also think that the United States is planning, in the immediate term, to take on China. They got to deal with Russia first, right? But they're already planning China. And I'm going to make a prediction here. They're going to move to expand NATO to elsewhere in the world, not just Europe. They're going to bring into NATO Australia, New Zealand, for sure, those two, right? Maybe even Taiwan. We may have a Ukraine 2.0 over Taiwan, because the U.S. is certainly building up its military arms shipments to Taiwan. Chinese are getting very nervous about that. The U.S. has changed the mission of the U.S. Marine Corps. You know, up to now, the Marine Corps was kind of fighting on land, you know, like the Army here in Afghanistan and other places. Well, that's been totally changed now, structurally and strategically, to an amphibian invasion force, like it was in World War II in the Pacific. Well, what do you think that's about? That's about taking the Chinese-occupied South China Sea islands. That's what the U.S. is going to do first before it does anything in Taiwan. That's the next move that's coming. And the Chinese are going to be in a very difficult situation if the U.S. does that. They're going to take back those islands. Okay, so, you know, this is the beginning of, you know, the drift towards Third World War. I really think so, which isn't going to be like the Second World War. It's going to have a lot of dimensions to it, electronic and cybersecurity and so forth, economic. You know, and then at the last hour, you get the military conflict. Ukraine's beginning to look to me like Spain, 1937, where both sides of sitting back and using a proxy to test each other's resolve and military effectiveness and so forth. I think that's what's happening here. Ukraine is Spain 2.0, Spain 1937 2.0. All of this, though, all this geopolitical stuff, you know, getting back to the U.S. economy means more stress on the economy that never really recovered fully from the pandemic. it seems like, Biden's totally preoccupied, isn't he? It's a big distraction from the total failure of the Democrat Party on its domestic front. Total failure. Nothing really fundamentally in terms of stimulus got done. Yeah, they threw some checks at people. That was good. They provided some extra unemployment for a while. That was good. They threw some grants at small businesses. And they said, that's enough. And they shut it all down. And the real longer-term programs, like Medicare for All, student debt forgiveness, guaranteed college, at least 2 years for everybody who wanted it, all these other civilized things that other countries have, right? Oh, no, none of this long-term stuff. The subsidy for child care. Other countries, advanced countries, have child care support. Well, they pulled that one, too. Whenever there's a real crisis, they'll throw a few crumbs to keep people from really getting mad. But as soon as it's stabilized, the first signs of stabilization, whoop, cut it off, austerity time. Oh, then the next big thing, we got to get more tax cuts for the rich folks. Yeah, that's the next big thing. So that's where we are, We've entered a kind of austerity phase where the austerity is really being done. So austerity means you take back what you gave. Inflation is the vehicle to enact austerity, taking back the income that was given to people during the crisis. Well, it's just like what happened after 2008-09, the same thing. Obama threw insufficient, $787 billion, and then he, 2 years later, he took back $1.5 trillion. So the same thing is happening now. That's the picture with inflation, which is going to continue, which is going to have a negative impact on U.S. economic growth and contraction that's going on now. At the same time, you got globally slowing down going on, which is going to exacerbate the U.S. slowdown because it's all global, interconnected economy. China slowing down half of what it predicted. Europe going into recession now. Yeah. Other countries in big trouble, too, because when the Fed raises its interest rates like it's doing so high and so fast, it drives up the value of the dollar, which it's doing, and as the dollar, the global currency, rises, other currencies contract. Whether Latin America or wherever, they contract. When they contract, they can buy less imports, and those imports are more expensive, so that adds to their inflation, currency-driven inflation, adds to their inflation, and then they have to raise their interest rates to try to deal with their inflation, slows down their economy. In other words, the U.S. exports its inflation and its recession to the rest of the world because of the dollar. And that's going on big time now. Not only emerging market economies, Japan, its currency, the yen, is falling fast. Pretty worried over there, and even the Chinese yuan contracting. That's all because the dollar is rising, as because the Fed is raising interest rates at a record level, which is going to continue because that's the decision that the elites have made in this country. Take out on the backs of consumers and households the inflation that the oil companies and other monopolies are imposing on American people. And this war in Ukraine only exacerbates all of that, on top of it all. But, the war is the only thing Biden's got to run on. Support a president, in the middle of a war. Well, it's not really a war we're fighting, but it is a proxy war the U.S. is fighting. I've been saying it's a proxy war, predicting that even before February It's going to be a proxy war. And that's what's going on right now. And Biden has thrown his eggs in that basket, and they're breaking. Because he's got nothing else. He's failed in everything else to deliver. And what little got delivered is now being taken away by austerity and inflation. What a disaster. What an absolute disaster in economic policy in the U.S. It's the empire under pressure and engaging in adventures, American global economic empire, engaging in adventures to try to shore it up, to try to reestablish U.S. hegemony politically in the world and in Europe and places like that. It's a desperation move. But don't underestimate, you know, what the empire can still do and will do, is doing during this era of increased challenge to it. But it just may release even more contradictions as it tries to engage in wars and all these other solutions here to resolve the problem. But it's not going to get resolved. You see, contradictions are only worsening, and the pressures on the economy. I'm just worried that we may be headed, as inflation continues, to another financial crisis, as companies and people cannot pay their debts because they don't have their income to do it, and the rates are too high to borrow money to do it. That's a formula that brings you right into defaults, debt defaults, and then you got contagion, and then you got a financial crash on top of the real economy and its problems. Okay, so the title here, the Fed has decided recession. That's what's happened. And it's happening quicker than I had thought, as the recent GDP numbers indicate. And we can expect more of the same, maybe offset by government war spending to some extent, but it'll be even worse. It's already here. Inflation's not going away. Recession's not going away, i.e. stagflation is here big time. And that's what we face going into the elections. And that's why the Democrats are toast in November, and they know it. They've blown it. Well, that's what you get when corporate Democrats engineer a guy like Biden, a corporate Democrat, and push Sanders and the progressives and their programs away. Totally engineered out of South Carolina. This is what you get. Clyburn did it, right? You get a Biden. The corporate Democrats are in control of that party, and they're not going to let go. And the progressives like Sanders and others know better, but they're still hanging on, you know, doing the bidding, ultimately. And it's going to get worse, folks. Get ready. Economics is going to get worse. The war is going to get worse. Inflation is going to get worse. The election, the Republicans are going to come back. And we're going to do this shell game in the last 40 years all over again until we wise up and get some kind of independent political movement and party to challenge him. Okay, that's my story for today. And finally came back after an illness that I had. And we'll follow this closely in subsequent weeks here. Okay, I'm out of here.